Okay, better? Yeah. Thank you. All right, so chapters 27 and 28, Moses is pronouncing, these are the blessings God will give you if you love him and obey him and do his commandments. And if you don't, then these are the curses. Remember, the curses were much longer than the blessings, because maybe that's going to be more practical for them. Since they're going to disobey, this is what God is going to do to them. Then 29 and 30 is basically Moses at Moab. So they're really close to crossing over, as we'll see today or tonight. And this is basically Moses saying, God has helped you up until from Egypt up until this point. And he says, be sure you obey God's covenant, or else you will be like Sodom and Gomorrah. And God will punish you in that way. But when you repent, chapter 30, he will bless you even more than your fathers. So again, we see the love of God wanting them, desiring them to do his will. And then finally, that last section there, 11 through 20, is choose life, not death. So it's a really powerful ending to that section. But what Moses does here in chapter 31 is in verses 1 through 13, Moses is going to speak to different individuals and or groups. And so he's going to talk to three different groups of people in verses 1 to 13. And then verses 14 to 22, God speaks directly to Moses and tells Moses, this is what's going to happen after you die. And then we have in verse 23, God talking to Joshua, who is the new leader, or who will be the new leader. And then 24 to 30 is going to be my encouragement to for us to study and listen to Jacob next week. That's where God is telling him, this is what the Song of Moses is going to be about. And it's going to be a witness against you. So I'm going to do my best, Jacob, to just get him really excited about next week. So let's start in verse 1 through 13. This is a shorter chapter, so we do have time to read, at least here at the beginning. And if we run out of time, I'll just summarize. So I think the best thing we can do is read the text. So chapter 31, 1 through 13. So Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel. And he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I am no longer able to come and go. And the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross this Jordan. It is the Lord your God who will cross ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua is the one who will cross ahead of you, just as the Lord has spoken. The Lord will do to them just as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land when he destroyed them. The Lord will deliver them up before you, and you shall do to them according to all the commandments which I commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them, for the Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Then Moses called to Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall give it to them as an inheritance. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. So Moses wrote this law and gave it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, and to all the elders of Israel. Then Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the time of the year of remission of debts, at the Feast of Booths, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God, at the place which he will choose, you shall read this law in front of all Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, the men and the women and the children and the alien who is in your town, so that they may hear and learn and fear the Lord your God and be careful to observe all the words of this law. Their children who have not known will hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live on the land which you are about to cross the Jordan to possess. Okay, so verses 1 through 6 is his instruction to all of Israel. And he says in verses 1 and 2, I am 120 years old at this point, and I am unable to cross over the Jordan. So why is he unable to cross? Yes. So it's not because he's 120 and is just barely moving at this point, right? If you look at chapter 34 and in verse 7, you could say that Moses dies very healthy, right? Full of vigor, no dimness of the eyes, things of that nature. So I'm not able to cross because I disobeyed, and the Lord does not want me to cross over. So what does he say in verses 3 through 5 that would encourage them? Yes. So notice the contrast there in verse 2. Moses says, I'm not able to cross over. Then verse 3, that shouldn't bother you, that I'm not able to cross over, because the Lord is the one who is going to cross over. He's the one you need. He's the one that's going to lead you to conquer the land, not me. And so they're going to mourn Moses' death for 30 days, right? He's been their leader ever since they were born, right? This generation, they have not known another leader than Moses. So I'm not going to be with you, but that doesn't matter. The Lord God is with you. And that's what matters. It does not matter who is leading them. If God is with them, they will have success. Let me kind of change that a little bit, reverse. They could have a great leader, but if God is not with them, what's going to happen? They're going to fail. So what does success depend on? God. I think sometimes it's easy to say our success depends on people, right? Or the talents of someone, where, no, really the success, it doesn't matter how good or bad the leader is. If God is with them, he's the one that gives success. As Paul would say, we're just vessels of clay. We're a bunch of pots around here, but we carry a very valuable message. So God is the one that gives success. He also says Joshua is going to take the reins, if you will, and he is going to be the one that will lead you and cross over. And then what does he say in these verses that would also encourage them? God's going to be with you. Joshua's going to lead you. And then what else does he remind them of? What does he say that could give them confidence? Yes, so good. One of the things that should give them confidence is God promised this to them. So God, it's impossible for him to lie. What else do you see that would kind of help them and give them confidence that we're gonna be able to take the land? Good. So, yes, absolutely. So God will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og. It's neat, I guess, for me, that you see this is kind of the end of the last speech of Moses, if you will. Remember how he began the speech? Now, that was about 5 months ago, wasn't it, when we started this class. But remember that how he began. Chapters 1 through 3 were basically Moses retelling the history, right? You remember that? And one of the things that he does basically all of chapter 2 and half of chapter 3 is he describes how God defeated Sihon and Og. And they were remnants of the giants. They had fortified cities. I think they had like 60 cities that God wiped out. And so just like Sihon and Og, that's what Canaan's going to be like. And so remember how God devastated that land. He's going to do the same. So he's given them a lot of confidence. Says, I've done this before. I can do it again. Trust in me, not people, right? And if as long as I'm with you, you'll have success. Do you have a comment? Okay. So God will do to them as he did. And that story there is found in Numbers 21. God will give you the victory. And at the very end there, in verse 6, verse 5, and you shall do, God will deliver them before you, and you shall do to them according to all the commandments which I have commanded you. In other words, God's going to do his part. You make sure to do your part, right? God has given you laws, commandments on what you need to do once God has delivered them. Now, kind of a sneak peek, we are going to be studying the book of Joshua next, and kind of flows right in, right? And we're going to see them fail to do that. So God gives them the victory, but they don't do what he commands them to do. So it's always a two-part. Verse 6, this again is to all the people of Israel. What does he tell them, or what sticks out to you in verse 6? Say it again, sorry.
Song title.
Yes, yeah, very good song title. Be strong and courageous. And you'll notice a lot of what he says to Israel in verse 6, he repeats to Joshua, right? In verses 7 and 8. But they're not going to have Moses, but should that make them fearful? No, God's with them. You be strong and courageous. Don't tremble, don't fear, because God is the one who goes out before you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great picture. God is the one that's leading them. You know, I've led you, I'm going to be done, but you're going to get a much better leader. God is leading, he's paving the way. So you just be strong and courageous. So it's powerful. Yes. Great point. Great point. Isn't it Paul that told Timothy, we do not have a spirit of timidity and fear, but one of strength, confidence, power? Because we have God on our side. What can man do to us, right? So just that mentality, that attitude. And then before all Israel, he says, Joshua, come over here. And he tells Joshua, you're the leader. So he does that in front of everybody. So they know, just as the Lord had commanded that to be done. And he tells him, you need to be strong and courageous. So what are your thoughts on why would he tell Joshua, or repeat to Joshua what he just told Israel? Why would he need to tell Joshua, be strong and courageous? Good. I think that's a lot of it. Because he's going to tell us in this chapter, Moses, when you die, this is what's going to happen. So Joshua has a big responsibility, and also, who are people going to look up to? Who are they going to be influenced? Well, it's going to be Joshua. And if Joshua is afraid, that's just going to affect everybody, right? So this is going to be Moses' or God's instruction to him. God is going to say the same thing to him in Joshua 1. But the Lord is the one that goes before you. He will not fail you or forsake you. That is quoted for us in Hebrews chapter 13, right? And so this is very practical. This is not just for Joshua, right? This is for all of us. That God is with us. He'll not fail you. He'll not forsake you. So we should have this same confidence and excitement that Joshua did. It's a powerful message, right? And one we need, and especially one we need in difficult circumstances, right? So he will not fail you. He'll not forsake you. The Hebrew writer uses that to encourage us in those things. And this is, isn't this kind of what played out with David and Goliath? God was with David, and that's why he won. Right? And David said, I'm fully depending on the Lord, not my accuracy of the sling and the stone. And he didn't try to tell Israel, now put away the swords. What you really need is a sling and stone, and you can beat any army you want. No, he depended on the Lord instead of his own talents, abilities. So that's what they're going to need when they go up against these fortified cities, these giants. I'm going to apply this towards evangelism because I think that's our field, right? We are to go out into the harvest. The harvest is plenty. And sometimes we can say, well, I just don't know what to say, or I don't have what it takes, or I don't know what to do. And we kind of put so much on us that we forget, you know, the Lord is with you. It's his message. They're not rejecting you if they reject them. They're rejecting the Lord. I don't know if I've ever told this story before. When I was in Indiana, I was studying with a guy. And he said, Patrick, I think I want to be baptized. I said, oh, this is wonderful. You know, it's very exciting. And I just was fumbling all over the place. And at the end of me fumbling and just doing whatever, he says, okay, I think I need to be baptized. I think I need to be ready. Well, that was really helpful to me because despite me, he still wanted to be baptized. And so I think sometimes we put too much, well, I have to have it just right, and I need to say just the right thing. God's going to open the doors. He's the one that's doing the work. We're just trying to water and feed the best we can. So God is the one at work. He will cause the increase. So, anyways, anything else that you would add through verse 8? Kind of there, his message to Joshua and the people. Yes. Good point. I agree. Good. Any other thoughts? So he now turns to the Levite. Well, who does he speak to next? Kind of two groups of people here. In look, verse 9. I think you went too far on me. So the priest, the sons of Levi, they were carrying the ark and the elders. So these are kind of the influencers, those who are kind of out and leaders of the people. And he says at the end of every 7 years, they are to read this law. Now, the cool thing about this is this is actually done in Nehemiah chapter 8, which is really cool. So they see this is what we've read, and now we need to do it. So this is kind of fulfilled one time at least, hopefully more than once, but at least that one time they did this. Now, does this mean it's the only time they're allowed to read this law? Well, certainly not, right? But this is a special time where it is set aside, and this is what they are to do. And this is at the Feast of Booths. So what's the Feast of Booths about?
Help them remember their wandering through the wilderness and how they have to rely on the Lord.
Good, good. So they were in, or sometimes it's called the Feast of Tabernacles. Tabernacle or tents or, you know, any of the above. And this was kind of in the autumn, this was the last big festival of the Jews. And this was a time of great excitement and joy. But during all this time of festivities and joy, they say, let's read the law. Let's read what Moses said for us to do. And verse 12 and 13, I'm wondering what you're thinking of this. What was the law supposed to do? Or what was the reading of the law? What was the purpose of reading the law in those two verses? Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yes. So they can hear and learn to fear the Lord. And we saw this a lot at the beginning, be careful to do his commandments. Would you say that this is kind of the purpose of Deuteronomy spelled out in these two verses, especially verse 12? When I read this and looked at it, I was like, well, this is the whole purpose of this class. Right? This is the purpose of Deuteronomy, is so that we, not just them, that we may learn to fear the Lord, and that we may learn the importance of observing his law so carefully. And so this book is so practical. And I hope we've kind of brought that out. I know Jacob has for me. But this is really a good theme verse that I see for the whole book of Deuteronomy. So that's why reading, studying Deuteronomy is just so important, so that we can fear the Lord, learn to carefully observe what he says. And then verse 13, what other reason does he give? So your children will know. And that goes, unfortunately, they will, if you don't teach them, what's going to happen? They're not going to know who God is. And if you turn to Judges 2, verse 10, remember it says there was the generation of Joshua, they did well, and then there arose a generation who did not know the Lord. So I think this came to fulfillment not too many years after this was written. So very, very important to pass this on to your children, not so they'll know it, not so that they'll be scholars of each law and know what to do, so they may observe, know how to fear the Lord. And that's really the purpose. Okay, so a lot, of course, in there, that first 13 verses there. Any thoughts or comments through verse 13? So 14 to 22, this is God speaking to Moses. So verse 14, he says, go get Joshua and bring him to the tent of meeting. And then you see kind of the cloud appearing and God appearing before both of them. And then in verses 15 to 18, he tells Moses, this is what will happen to his people. This was powerful to me, in looking at it. He just tells Moses, this is what's going to happen when you die. And it's not that very encouraging, right? But do you think this was a shock to Moses? Not with this group, right? He has seen them kind of go this way time and time again, but God confirms it for him. He says, the people will arise, they will play the harlot with strange gods. That kind of takes you to Hosea, right? And then he says, they will forsake me and they will break my covenant. I will get extremely angry with them and then I will consume them. Then he says, is it not because our God is not among us that these evils and troubles will come upon us? And so eventually they're going to recognize, wait, all this evil and trouble that's happening is because God is not here. And so God said, well, I'm going to turn my face away. And that's a phrase that you'll often see, especially in the Psalms, especially in the prophets, where God says, I'm turning my face away from you. And that's like the worst thing that could ever happen. That's horrific. If God says, I'm not even going to look on you anymore. Kind of the if I turn my face to you, you have my blessing. If God turns his face away, you're up to your own devices and that's not going to be good for you. In Jeremiah 33, verse 5, God hid his face from Jerusalem. And then what did Nebuchadnezzar do to that? Right, just killed it. So his hiding his face is kind of the worst thing. It's because they turned on him, right? And so if they turn from God, you reap what you sow, is the idea. Yes, sir?
Is that somewhat like your prayers will be hindered in the New Testament? You know, it talks several times about, you know, if you do this, your prayers aren't going to get heard. And it's like a root of bitterness can spring up between a husband and a wife, and your prayers are not going to be heard. There's just relationships. Certain things God kind of does that. I'm wondering if it's kind of the same thing.
Sure. I was referencing the same verse that you brought up, 1 Peter 3. In verse 7, husband, the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way as someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. And there's a passage in John, I can't think of it right now, but it's a story about the guy that was born, or had been lame for 40 years, or 38 years. And he kind of says that, well, how can you say that Jesus is not the Son of God and yet he healed me? And then he makes this statement, we know, I mean, it's obvious that God does not hear sinners, right? Everybody knows that. And so how could he be a sinner and yet God heard his request to heal me? So that's kind of the point he makes, and I think exactly right. If we turn ourselves on God, the same thing for us. So I think that's a good application. Then verse 19 to 22, God tells Moses, I want you to teach him a song, and Jacob will teach us this song. I hope he has music for it as well. I'm real excited, Jacob, what you're going to have for us next week. Don't mean to put any pressure on you at all, but so give them this song, and it's going to be a witness against them. It is a song that tells, basically, this is what's going to happen to you if you turn away from God. This is what's going to happen to you if you turn away from God and go towards other gods. It's kind of prophecy, if you will. So this song that you're going to teach them, they're going to know it, and it's going to be a witness against them. So God warned them, about this. So it says, when I bless them, they will turn away from me, in verse 20. Again, I think there's so many references back to the earlier chapters, kind of the first, I would say five chapters of Deuteronomy. There just keep kind of going back. One of the things that God told them is, I'm going to bless you, and you're going to enter this land. It's going to be flowing with milk and honey. It's going to be so great. And you're going to say in your heart, look what I did. Look what I am able to do by my strength and by the power of my hands. And God said, you're going to be prideful about that. And when I bless you, that's when you're going to turn away. So it's a very practical application for us, is the more we prosper, what's the tendency? You get lazy and you begin to think, I don't need God, right? I don't need to depend on God because it seems like I'm doing pretty good on my own. So there's a great blessing. And God said, when you were in the wilderness, I fed you manna, and I was testing you for your own good. And that's in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 11 through 20, kind of tells you that. And so verse 21, this song will testify against them. There's something about a song that just kind of sinks in your memory. That I know the books of the Bible because of a song. I know the apostles' names because of a song. I know, all these things. It's just kind of music, and it moves you. And so maybe that's some of the reason why I want you to write a song, and that will stick with them. Maybe the meter or whatever it is. Notice all of the things that are testifying against them. So we'll kind of maybe take note of that. Verse 21, this is interesting, and I'm running out of time already. But he says that, I know their intent. This is God speaking. I know their intent, which they are, the New American Standard says, developing today, before I have brought them into the land. God knows our thoughts, and he knows where that development is leading. So before they even step into the land, I can tell where they're headed. So to me, that means I need to be very careful with my thoughts. I need to be very careful about where those thoughts may lead. Where am I headed? And that's why Paul would tell the Philippians, chapter 4, verse 8, whatever things are pure, right? Whatever things are lovely, good report, dwell on these things. So he can already know. Their thoughts are already going in the wrong direction. And of course, our thoughts then lead to actions. So be very careful. So then, verse 22, Moses wrote this song and taught it to them. So he's a fast songwriter. So I guess it helps when you're inspired, maybe. So he writes this song, and we'll look at that, Lord willing, next week. Verse 23 says, God speaking to Joshua. So Moses spoke to Joshua in verses 7 and 8, and now God is speaking to Joshua in verse 23. Again, he tells him, be strong and courageous. You will bring the sons of Israel into the land which I swore to them. You're going to lead this group that is already straying away from me. I think to Miss Sherry's point, this is just a monstrous task for Joshua. But he says, what encouraging thing there that can you find in verse 23? I will be with you. Yeah, that's all that matters. And that's what's going to help Joshua. Go ahead.
Great privilege.
Good point.
With great privileges, great responsibility.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So we have a very similar statement in the New Testament. when Jesus tells his apostles, I want you to spread the gospel to the whole world. How are we going to do that? And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Ah, okay. Well, with God's help, we can do it. So that's the message there. And then verse 24 to 29, we have Moses' words to the Levites. So Moses finished writing the words of this book, and he hands it over to the Levites who were carrying the Ark of the Covenant. And this book, was to be set by the Ark. And now this book is a witness against them. If you look, verse 28 gives you another witness. So I counted at least three witnesses against them. Can you name them? What are the things that are witnessing against Israel?
The song.
The song. The law. And I'll combine these last two in verse 28. Yeah, the heavens and the earth. So all of these things are a witness against them. So what is the point in that? Why have all of these things as witnesses against them? What is God trying to do with that? What are your thoughts? Okay, good. So one is accountability. That you have, don't you, well, for me, I behave better when I have a witness. I said, all right, this person's going to be a witness against you. I had maybe a couple, I don't remember. I shouldn't be bringing this up. I'll just say one over 100 people as a witness when I married Misty. And I said, I'm going to be faithful to you. And I'm going to put you first. And I had all those people as a witness. They heard it. They heard those promises. So that was powerful. And that should be powerful. So all these things are witnesses against them. And it's interesting. I think someone said, and I think rightly so, the prophets are basically rehashing Deuteronomy. They're just telling, kind of repeating Deuteronomy in different words, in different ways. If you don't obey the Lord, this is what's going to happen. So a very powerful book, and a book saying, if you don't obey, these are all the things that God's going to do to you. So be sure to obey, right? So that you may fear the Lord, observe carefully what he says to do. And then verse 27, he says these encouraging words, right? I know that you're going to rebel. I know you're not going to do very well with this. I know your rebellion and your stubbornness, because I've been dealing with it for 40 years. And he would say maybe 40 really, really long years dealing with their rebellious nature. I'm going to do it my own way, even though God led them out of Egypt. I'm going to complain. Let's go back to Egypt. That's how stiff-necked they are. And what's Moses' argument that you see there in verse 27?
I've been here with them. How much more have I done?
Yes. So you are rebellious with me. I can't imagine how rebellious you're going to be when I'm dead. Maybe some of you are behaving because of me. Poor Joshua, right? Who's going to have to deal with you and lead you. But if you're rebellious now, how much more? That sounds like the Hebrew writer, right? How much more should we do this? So then, verses 28 and 29, Moses tells them, I want you to assemble the elders together so he can tell them. And Moses calls heaven and earth as witnesses against them. Moses tells them, you're going to fail. So I struggled with this aspect. I do have my answers, but I'm hoping you have some good thoughts as well. It was interesting to me, like in chapter 30, you remember how he wraps up that sermon? Is you have two choices, life or death. He ends by saying it would be really smart to choose life. And these are all the blessings that you get with that. What does he do here that's a little bit different than what he did at the end of chapter 30? Yes. So he never really says, therefore you should do good. Make sure you do good. But he just says, you're going to fail. you're going to rebel. I see this as just another warning from God. But what are your thoughts on that, on how he ends in this speech? Yes, sir.
It just hit me. But God told the exact same thing to Peter. And Peter said, I'll never deny you. And then Peter went and denied him. So this is like the same thing. God saying, you will, but you can still turn back.
Yes. So certainly, even in this chapter, there's a lot of, if you turn back, I will help. So this is your decision. Ms. Sherry, did you have? Yes, and I think that's why Moses said this so confidently to them. I know you're going to fail because that's what God just told me. So I think you're exactly right. Any other thoughts, kind of how he ends this, verse 28 and 29? Notice the idea of you reap what you sow. Kind of the last. Verse 29. For I know that after my death you will act corruptly and turn the way that I have commanded you, and the evil will befall you in the latter days, for you will do that which is evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger with the work of your hands. So evil things are coming. Why? Yes. So they do evil, which causes God to get angry with them, which causes evil things to happen to them. So you reap what you sow. And so he's already told them, if you want to reap blessings, obey. But this is how it's going to be, unfortunately. You're going to reap evil because that's what you've been sowing. Yes, ma'am. I think so, because it's so common for that phrase to mean that. Yes, ma'am. And where does he say that in this chapter? Okay, good. And he tells them before that they're going to go after other gods. And so maybe that's kind of a correspondent to that last phrase as well. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to next week, hopefully with music to sing, but maybe not. All right. Thank you.